Chapter 147. Written in the coarsest words, and thrust into my hand at every turn, from one mean villain, that I felt as if I had never known humiliation till that time. This shame my husband fixed upon me, hemmed me round with, himself, steeped me in, with his own hands, and of his own act, repeated hundreds of times. And thus forced by the two from every point of rest I had forced by the two, to yield up the last retreat of love and gentleness within me, or to be a new misfortune on its innocent object driven from each to each, and beset by one, when I escaped the other my anger rose almost to distraction against both I do not know against which it rose higher the master or the man. He watched her closely, as she stood before him in the very triumph of her indignant beauty. She was resolute, he saw, undauntable, with no more fear of him than of a worm. What should I say of honor, or of chastity to you? She went on. What meaning would it have to you? What meaning would it have from me? But if I tell you, that the lightest touch of your hand makes my blood cold with antipathy, that from the hour, when I first saw and hated you, to now, when my instinctive repugnance is enhanced by every minute's knowledge of you, I have since had, you have been a loathsome creature to me which has not its like on earth. How then? He answered with a faint laugh, eh? How then, my queen? On that night, when, emboldened by the scene you had assisted at, you dared come to my room, and speak to me, she said, what passed? He shrugged his shoulders, and laughed, what passed? She said, your memory is so distinct, he said, that I have no doubt you can recall it. I can, she said. Hear it. Proposing then, this flight not this flight, but the flight you thought it, you told me that in the having given you that meeting, and leaving you to be discovered there, if you so thought fit, and in the having suffered you to be alone with me many times before, and having made the opportunities, you said, and in the having openly avowed to you, that I had no feeling for my husband but aversion, and no care for myself I was lost. I had given you the power to traduce my name, and I lived, in virtuous reputation, at the pleasure of your breath, all stratagems in love he interrupted, smiling. The old adage on that night, said Edith, and then, the struggle that I long, had had with something that was not respect for my good fame that was I know, not what perhaps the clinging to that last retreat was ended. On that night, and then, I turned from everything but passion and resentment. I struck a blow, that laid your lofty master in the dust, and set you there, before me, looking at me now, and knowing what I mean. He sprung up from his chair with a great oath. She put her hand into her bosom, and not a finger trembled, not a hair upon her head was stirred. He stood still. She too. The table and chair between them. Tilda, when I forget that this man put his lips to mine that night, and held me in his arms as he has done again tonight, said Edith, pointing at him, when I forget the taint of his kiss upon my cheek, the cheek that Florence would have laid her guiltless face against, when I forget my meeting with her, while that taint was hot upon me, and in what a flood the knowledge rushed upon me when I saw her, that in releasing her from the persecution I had caused by my love, I brought a shame and degradation on her name through mine, and in all time to come, should be the solitary figure representing in her mind her first avoidance of a guilty creature then, husband, from whom I stand divorced henceforth, I will forget these last 2 years, and undo what I have done, and undeceive you. Her flashing eyes, uplifted for a moment, lighted again on Carker, and she held some letters out in her left hand. See these. She said, contemptuously. You have addressed these to me in the false name you go by, one here, some elsewhere on my road. The seals are unbroken. Take them back. She crunched them in her hand, and tossed them to his feet. And as she looked upon him now, a smile was on her face. We meet and part tonight, apostrophe she said. You have fallen on Sicilian days and sensual rest, too soon. You might have cajoled, and fawned, and played your traitor's part, a little longer, and grown richer. You purchase your voluptuous retirement, dear. Apostrophe apostrophe Edith. Apostrophe apostrophe he retorted, menacing her with his hand. Sit down. Have done with this. What devil possesses you? Apostrophe, their name is Legion, apostrophe she replied, uprearing her proud form, as if she would have crushed him. You and your master have raised him in a fruitful house, and they shall tear you both. False to him, false to his innocent child, false every way and everywhere, go forth and boast of me, and gnash your teeth, for once, to know that you are lying. Apostrophe apostrophe, he stood before her, muttering and menacing, and scowling round, as if for something that would help him to conquer her, but with the same indomitable spirit she opposed him, without faltering. In every vaunt you make, apostrophe she said, I have my triumph. I single out in you the meanest man I know, the parasite and tool of the proud tyrant, that his wound may go the deeper, and may rankle more. Boast, and revenge me on him. You know how you came here tonight. You know how you stand cowering there. You see yourself in colors quite as despicable, if not as odious, as those in which I see you. Boast then, and revenge me on yourself. Apostrophe, the foam was on his lips. The wet stood on his forehead. If she would have faltered once for only one half moment, he would have pinioned her. But she was as firm as rock, and her searching eyes never left him. We don't part so, apostrophe he said. Do you think I am driveling, to let you go in your mad temper? Apostrophe apostrophe, do you think, apostrophe she answered, that I am to be stayed? Apostrophe, I'll try, my dear, apostrophe he said with a ferocious gesture of his head. God's mercy on you, if you try by coming near me. Apostrophe apostrophe she replied. And what, apostrophe he said, if there are none of these same boasts and vaunts on my part? What if I were to turn to? Come. Apostrophe and his teeth fairly shone again. We must make a treaty of this, or I may take some unexpected course. Sit down, sit down. Apostrophe, too late. Apostrophe apostrophe she cried, with eyes that seemed to sparkle fire. I have thrown my fame and good name to the winds. I have resolved to bear the shame that will attach to me, resolved to know that it attaches falsely, that you know it too, and that he does not, never can, and never shall. I'll die, and make no sign. For this, I am here alone with you, at the dead of night. For this, I have met you here, in a false name, as your wife. For this, I have been seen here by those men, and left here. Nothing can save you now. He would have sold his soul to root her, in her beauty, to the floor, and make her arms drop at her sides, and have her at his mercy. But he could not look at her, and not be afraid of her. He saw a strength within her that was resistless. He saw that she was desperate, and that her unquenchable hatred of him would stop at nothing. His eyes followed the hand that was put with such rugged uncongenial purpose into her white bosom, and he thought that, if it struck at him, and failed, it would strike there, just as soon. He did not venture, therefore, to advance towards her, but the door by which he had entered was behind him, and he stepped back to lock it. Lastly, take my warning. Look to yourself. Apostrophe she said, and smiled again. You have been betrayed, as all betrayers are. It has been made known that you are in this place, or were to be, or have been. If I live, I saw my husband in a carriage in the street tonight. Apostrophe apostrophe, strumpet, it's false. Apostrophe apostrophe, cried Carker. At the moment, the bell rang loudly in the hall. He turned white, as she held her hand up like an enchantress, at whose invocation the sound had come. Hark, do you hear it? Apostrophe, he set his back against the door, for he saw a change in her, and fancied she was coming on to pass him. But, in a moment, she was gone through the opposite doors communicating with the bedchamber, and they shut upon her. Once turned, once changed in her inflexible unyielding look, he felt that he could cope with her. He thought a sudden terror, occasioned by this night alarm, had subdued her, not the less readily, for her overwrought condition. Throwing open the doors, he followed, almost instantly. But the room was dark, and as she made no answer to his call, he was fain to go back for the lamp. He held it up, and looked round, everywhere, expecting to see her crouching in some corner, but the room was empty. So, into the drawing room and dining room he went, in succession, with the uncertain steps of a man in a strange place, looking fearfully about, and prying behind screens and couches, but she was not there. No, nor in the hall, which was so bare, that he could see that, at a glance. All this time, the ringing at the bell was constantly renewed, and those without were beating at the door. He put his lamp down at a distance, and going near it, listened. There were several voices talking together. At least two of them in English, and though the door was thick, and there was great confusion, he knew one of these too well, to doubt whose voice it was. He took up his lamp again, and came back quickly through all the rooms, stopping as he quitted each, and looking round for her, with the light raised above his head. He was standing thus in the bedchamber, when the door, leading to the little passage in the wall, caught his eye. He went to it, and found it fastened on the other side. But she had dropped a veil in going through, and shut it in the door. All this time the people on the stairs were ringing at the bell, and knocking with their hands and feet. He was not a coward. But these sounds, what had gone before, the strangeness of the place, which had confused him, even in his return from the hall, the frustration of his schemes, for, strange to say, he would have been much bolder if they had succeeded, the unseasonable time, the recollection of having no one near to whom he could appeal for any friendly office, above all, the sudden sense, which made even his heart beat like lead, that the man whose confidence he had outraged, and whom he had so treacherously deceived, was there to recognize and challenge him with his mask plucked off his face, struck a panic through him. He tried the door in which the veil was shut, but couldn't force it. He opened one of the windows, and looked down through the lattice of the blind, into the courtyard. But it was a high leap, and the stones were pitiless. The ringing and knocking still continuing his panic too, he went back to the door in the bedchamber, and with some new efforts, each more stubborn than the last, wrenched it open. Seeing the little staircase not far off, and feeling the night air coming up, he stole back for his hat and coat, made the door as secure after him as he could, crept down lamp in hand, extinguished it on seeing the street, and having put it in a corner, went out where the stars were shining. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.